Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon at ITT Hub at Farnborough International. 2 days of working together with everybody who's involved with data, everybody working with our disruptors, energy providers, vehicle manufacturers. We're all together for a 2-day event, supported, of course, by our friends at Logistics UK, with their thought leadership event going on simultaneously. Who better to talk to during ITT Hub Week than our great friends at Lloyds Bank? I've been talking to Joy Newton, who's the Associate Director of Sustainability and ESG Finance at Lloyds Bank, and also with Victoria Whitehead, who's the Managing Director of Infrastructure and Transport at the bank. And I started off with Victoria, and just asking the two of them, really, since the government is urging us to get to net zero, and because the transport sector is such a huge contributor to pollution and damage to the environment, what's the role of technology in this, and what's the bank doing about it?
So I think the simple answer is fundamental. It's got an absolutely huge role to play. We simply can't achieve our net zero ambitions without technology in transport, so we're reliant on it to decarbonise the sector. You know, we're already seeing the benefits of new technology. I mean, the obvious one and the early movers are in the form of electric vehicles. I think we'd also call out battery electric and hydrogen buses as early movers. But, you know, there's certainly more to come in the transport space, and we need it. But technology isn't only about how we power our transport system differently and reduce and lower emissions. The benefits of technology can also be seen through automation, digitalization. You know, that'll really allow us to, you know, see our transport system as a whole and how the different parts can interlink. And I think it's on that basis that, you know, we can realize the full potential and create a better, efficient transport network and also effectively plan better. I would say that mobility has changed and it continues to change. User demands, I mean, COVID has absolutely changed behaviours, working patterns. We've got an ageing population. We've got a focus on regional regeneration. And ultimately, we want a transport system that can really adapt to the needs of society and overall improve lives. And technology will be really crucial to that.
I mean, it is really exciting, isn't it? If I think back to young people looking for exciting careers, I mean, transport is fabulous now, isn't it? Because it isn't just about engines and gearboxes. It's about all the technology. There are some really great quality jobs, aren't there, now in the whole transport technology sector?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose one of my key call outs is that, you know, in the UK, on a global scale, we've set a really ambitious target to be a powerhouse in terms of these new technologies. So actually, we're creating and stimulating manufacturing and jobs on the ground in the UK. And we're offering a new type of role to our new generation. So yeah, I'd absolutely concur with that.
I was just going to add to that, but I think when you consider, you know, career progression for people and how exciting the industry is, taking it back up that level to the really high level policy and just technologies that are needed for decarbonisation as a whole is really important to focus on as well. And I think when you look at things that have been recently published, like the UK's energy security strategy and obviously the terrible tragedy that's happening in Ukraine at the moment, but the concept of the energy trilemma has come up again when you talk about, you know, needing a clean, affordable and resilient energy supply. We see the same thing and the same need in the transport sector. You know, people really want clean ways of commuting or for transport, and identifying what technologies are key for that, whether it be, you know, electrification, hydrogen or other, but also affordability. And if you take surface transport as an example, you know, the upfront cost is still quite high in that space. And then when we look at the third aspect of resilience, that's another core thing, another key parallel that we can take from the kind of energy security piece as well, because people, you know, have range anxiety, and that is a real thing that people are worried about, transitioning to different technologies, but making sure that we have the infrastructure there to really make sure that we can deliver on these super ambitious decarbonisation plans as well.
And you are right that they are super ambitious, and quite rightly so, because the environmentalists, of course, are telling us that we're 1 minute to midnight in terms of the damage that's being done to the planet through all the pollutants that are being pushed out into the atmosphere. So as part of going quickly, I guess I'm really interested also in which of the technologies are the ones that are likely to make the most impact?
Yeah, and I think that's a brilliant question, and we're assessing that ourselves at the moment. So what we're looking at really is across the bank, we're looking at 85 technologies in the bank at the moment that have been identified as crucial for the energy transition. And we're trying to identify, you know, where can we really accelerate our support? The bank's ambition is to help Britain prosper, and we're really committed to that and really trying to identify, you know, if we're building a hydrogen economy in the UK, what role can we play as a bank? And that's, you know, engaging with government, engaging with clients now so that we can get in early and help really shape what that economy can look like. And I think if you get into transport specifically on those 85 technologies, quite a lot of them sit in the transport space. Yeah, you know, I've talked about hydrogen, but batteries are also crucial. We're looking at charging infrastructure under that, smart charging, sustainable aviation fuels, biofuels, etc. So the list is really big, and we're in a really exciting place at the minute, trying to really identify where we can accelerate our support for this transition, not just on a kind of national scale, but really at a local level. You know, where can you make the biggest impacts as well? And as part of the government's levelling up agenda and really focusing on regional regeneration too.
I guess many of your customers must be pretty confused, because there's an infinite amount of information and an infinite number of conferences and an infinite number of suppliers trying to convince your customers that this is the right way to go. And I think quite a lot of the transport sector is still pretty circumspect, that it isn't quite sure in which direction we're heading. Is that fair?
I would say that is fair. But I'd say that in one area where there is a good line of sight and where it is already has the potential to make that huge impact, which is kind of goes back to your original question, Leon. I suppose, you know, we look at electric vehicles as one where, you know, the next decade is going to be crucial. And I suppose often when we talk about transport, you know, we think about it's 26% of the UK's emissions. You know, when we break it down, over 50, I think about 55% of that comes from cars and taxis. So internally, when we talk about transport, you know, we often talk about the bigger landscape. And then again, we kind of whittle it down and think, well, actually, where can we make the biggest impact? And I think there's lots to come. But just right now, what we've got in front of us is an opportunity to really transition away from ICE vehicles and harness kind of the work that's been done and turbocharge it in terms of the EV space. You know, the 10-point plan in November 2020 really called out that EVs can be the most visible way to reduce emissions. But also at Lloyds, we're very focused on, you know, growing the economy, you know, creating jobs and keeping us moving. And EVs really do tick all those boxes. And so I certainly see that as an area of kind of the biggest impact. And I don't think we're there yet. But actually, we've seen improvement in terms of product availability. We've seen improvement in terms of product capability and ranges, et cetera. I'd say one of the areas where we've still got a lot to do, and maybe this will be another question as we go through the session, is, you know, what's one of the challenges? And in EV charging regularly comes up in terms of the quantity and the quality to really support that EV take up.
Is that real or perceived? So firstly, cars on table, I have an electric car. Secondly, I know what range anxiety is, but frankly, it's so unusual for me to do a journey of over 200 miles that actually, why would I have range anxiety? I hear stories about EV charging points not being available, not being serviceable, about not being available in certain parts of the country and so on. But frankly, the technology delivers us out of that as well, because I'm sure most EV cars have this. You touch the touchscreen and it tells you the optimum place to go and recharge based on the journey that you're going to do. And it tells you how available it is and how serviceable it is and so on. So that's human perception rather than technological problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the challenges with all new technologies, right? I think when it's new, it's unproven, it's not been experienced, you know, there's real concerns. There's a lot of rhetoric in the press. I mean, you know, the EV charging, you know, isn't sufficient, it doesn't support the industry and the transition. And that kind of builds momentum in people's minds and it affects their behaviour and their perceptions. Look, I think, I'm someone who uses a car to nip around. You know, I'm a public transport person. I live in central London. But there are other people who do make those longer journeys, and of which actually this hasn't gone away as an issue for them and continues to be one. I think that, you know, we are in a place where we need to be investing five times faster than we currently are in EV charging to really be in a position to get the UK landscape ready for a transition away from ICE vehicles from that kind of 2030 cutoff. Joy, I don't know if you'd add anything further to that from an EV charging perspective.
I mean, I think the strategy is there, right, in terms of what the UK government have published in terms of the strategy for charging infrastructure in the UK as of last year. So there's definitely improvements being made around EV charging, and the ambition is there. I guess the challenge, as you put it, Leon, is early adoption. I mean, when we talk about EVs, we almost feel that we're gone past the early point. But to a lot of people, this is still new, and who maybe haven't sat in an electric car and, you know, haven't seen what amazing things the screen can do by pinpointing where and when you can charge and how long it's going to take you, etc. So I think there is a little bit of almost inertia, like to really just get us along the journey so that we can actually align our behaviours with the strategy that's been well put out and I think well received by the majority from government as well.
I'm glad to hear that, because I mean, it feels to me one of the places we've got to go is the provision of EV charging has got to keep comfortably ahead of the numbers of vehicles, because there's always got to be spare capacity. There's got to be empty spaces. Stopping to charge is one thing. Stopping to queue to charge is something quite different. And what other sort of challenges are we facing, not just on EV for cars, but generally on the whole zero emission business? What's our top three, our top four real challenges?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of new technologies, I mean, I think they are probably generic. I mean, I think the biggest challenge would be, you know, they're new, they're unproven. And so people are, that's somewhat prohibitive for some. And there's risk in that. Cost, often some of these new technology solutions have more expensive upfront costs. So, I mean, EVs we've talked about, but the same would be the case for buses in this space. Functionality, you know, does it offer the same capability as its kind of carbon heavy rival? Does it do the same thing? We hear that from the construction industry. HGVs, just right now, we don't have a comparable cost-effective solution for some of those things. And so the fourth one would be just the availability of that supporting infra, whether it's EVs or whether it's kind of being able to pipe hydrogen to, you know, a transport hub. The landscape also needs to be ready for the new technology in transport. So I'd call out those as my kind of 3/4 kind of generic challenges of these new technologies.
And at the risk of getting my head bitten off by some of my listeners, on hydrogen, so I brought the first hydrogen buses into London in 2004. I also ran them for 10 years between 2009 and 2019 or thereabouts. Hydrogen always feels like the answer to all of these problems from tomorrow. And it's been tomorrow for over 10 years. Have we really got to the point with hydrogen now where the science is perfected and the fledgling distribution network is starting to be developed? Or is it just another tomorrow?
So if I could take that one, I think there are some key decision points that are coming. And I think if you take the decision points that government have to make on hydrogen, that is essentially driving. I mean, if you look at the energy security strategy, UK government has doubled its ambition from 5 gigawatts to 10 gigawatts of hydrogen by 2030. And 50% of that, or at least 50% of that, needs to come from greener electrolytic hydrogen. So the ambition is there. The funding and the support is there for producers. I guess Vicky and I were talking about this earlier, that there is a challenge in terms of how you bridge all of this money is being pumped into the supply side. And actually, have we worked to identify who's going to take this hydrogen? How are we going to get it to those end consumers? You know, we don't have a transport system for hydrogen at the moment. There's a decision in 2023 on, you know, injecting hydrogen into the gas pipeline. And then there's another decision in 2026, which will say, okay, are we going to use hydrogen for heating? But those do feel still like quite a long way off. So I think to go back to your original question, Leon, it feels like it's the silver bullet for a lot of people in what we're going to deliver, but it's a and everything else. I don't think, you know, for EVs and things, that the first thing is how much can we electrify? The second thing is, okay, where do we diversify? What do we need in terms of hydrogen to, you know, support HGVs because they're too heavy to move when, you know, if you electrify, etc. So I think it's really just defining what the role of hydrogen is going to be for the transport sector, and then how we realise it and how we make sure that we've got the bridge and the balance between supply and demand.
And I just echo a few of those things. So I suppose I would say, you know, there is no one single solution. It will be a mix of technologies that allow us to achieve net zero. I think that that's widely accepted. I think we go back to it's the chicken and egg dilemma and the supply and demand, which comes first. And actually, it's interesting, Leon, that you say, you know, we need more chargers than we need EVs. We need those to be ahead. But there's a certain amount of cost that go and risk that goes in creating more infrastructure than is currently demanded. And it's the same in the hydrogen space. Do you create the supply and hope the demand will come? And it has to be that way around, but who's going to bear the cost of that? And so there is still a real requirement for government intervention to kind of help that in these early stages, particularly with new technology. I think people are still grappling with that kind of supply and demand, chicken and egg type dilemma.
If I could just add one more point on that, on a challenge of EV charging. I mean, we've made fantastic ground in, you know, new build legislation now, including charge points for every new home built and businesses, you know, having at least five charge points. But we have the big challenge of retrofitting. You know, there's a lot of homes already out there that don't have chargers. So what can we influence there? And if whether there's grants available or helping people to be able to install these, retrofitting will be a big challenge. And so I think it would be remiss of us to also leave that out.
One of the things I've noticed is how integrators have got their way into people going to zero emission, and they've been financing batteries, financing vehicles, financing charging infrastructure. They have been doing a number of things, but at a margin. And that margin is coming from the ultimate customer, possibly even coming from the financing. So I just wanted to talk with you about how you see these integrators going forward and whether that's some sort of difficulty, some sort of complication as far as primary banking is concerned.
Yeah, so look, I think we see that. We see that integrators coming into the market, but I think what we see them offering kind of ultimate operators or end users is taking the burden away from the ultimate user and offering a level of expertise and solutions and economies of scale because they're entering into contracts, you know, with a number of end users. I think, you know, from our perspective, to the extent that that can help speed up the transition, you know, we support it. And I suppose where we see our opportunity as a financier is maybe, you know, lending into those integrators, helping them with finance to allow them to service end users. So, you know, from our perspective, we don't see them kind of crowding us out of the market. We see ourselves working alongside them. If they are going to take some of the burden of new technology and offer expertise and skills to help our, you know, our the operators who are also our clients, then we do continue to support that.
My concern is I'm not even sure if the integrators will have a long shelf life, because to some extent what they're doing is filling the knowledge gap that many of the clients currently have. In due course, they'll get cleverer. The clients will understand this more. And in due course, I have a suspicion that the role of the integrators won't be as strong as it is currently. So if we've got, in particular, SMEs, people who've been a little bit circumspect about the whole sustainability business, but for them and more generally, what is the first step that people can really take in business to make that first step on the sustainability path?
I mean, I think you probably answered the question with the question. I think it's about making that first step. I suppose what we recognise at Lloyds is that every client will have a different journey in terms of transition. I think, you know, our suggestion is to make a commitment to make a plan. Whether that's small or big, you know, even that first step can really lead to, a bigger strategy. And, you know, we definitely see, you know, apprehensive clients who are nervous about making commitments, stating commitments. But actually, when they make those commitments, actually the focus on them and then the achievement of them quickly sees more commitments being made. So I think, you know, in terms of a first step, I think that committing to a plan is probably key.
And as we said, actually, it's a bit easier than you thought. Once you've made that first step and you realize you're not alone. You've got other businesses, you've got people in your supply chain, you've got great, great encouragement from your customers and also from the bank.
Absolutely.
So, Joy, I was just thinking, what is it that the bank can do to help businesses in this?
I mean, one of the things, and I've mentioned it earlier, you know, we're actively identifying where and what technologies we can identify where we can really accelerate our support. We talk a lot about the E of ESG being the environment, but we need to talk more about the S and the G and the social and the governance. And so that's one of the key things that we're also doing. We're looking at these technologies and where we can accelerate our support, but also looking at where, you know, the regional and economic impacts are going to be felt within the country so that we can help to deliver a just transition transition, not just the energy transition. And I guess another way that we're doing that, you know, we have a 20-person strong team at Lloyds Bank, which is there to help clients on their sustainability journeys. And one of the things that we do within that team is look at sustainability linked loans. And a sustainability linked loan is a loan that has sustainability KPIs linked to it. And on achieving those KPIs, you'll get a discounted margin. And so some of the examples that we've seen of KPIs has really been making a commitment to reducing emissions. And, you know, the rules of which we can operate and offer these loans are quite stringent. You know, we need to make sure that they're stretching targets. We need to make sure that they're material to businesses. So there really is a back and forth kind of challenge to make sure that we're getting the right KPIs from organizations. And I think the organizations that we've worked with have seen a real value in that kind of challenge around whether their you know, KPIs are stretching and are challenging. And one of the real benefits that we've seen has been, you know, it used to be just financier to financier within an organization. That's widening now, and the room is getting a little bit bigger because we have sustainability teams, we have strategy and regulation teams all sitting around the table agreeing what these metrics will be so that organizations can achieve a discounted margin. So I think the bank has a really big role to be playing in this transition. And we've recruited external expertise, deep technical knowledge on this. So it's really important, I think, that we continue to build that momentum.
And I promise you, hundreds of people just sat up when they heard discounted margin, and they're just replaying the last 4 or 5 minutes again to make sure that's what they heard. But I think it's fascinating to know that the bank has got such deep knowledge, has got so much expertise, and long before we even start to talk about the money, the bank has got plenty of help for its customers in respect of how to make the steps on the sustainability agenda and how it could be achieved, what the KPIs that need to be dealt with might look like, and how to exploit it to make a bigger, better, stronger business, which is also more environmentally friendly. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Yep. Very exciting.
So we're all at ITT Hub next week. What do you hope to see as you walk the exhibition floors?
Well, I'm hoping to see people face to face, which I think, you know, we've all been craving. I think that face-to-face engagement, socialising of different stakeholders, it's great that the ITT Hub can really bring those different stakeholders together. You know, the obvious stakeholders in the transport sector, you know, the automotives, the vans, the buses, coaches, HGVs, you know, the whole transport landscape. But also the stakeholders from the finance community, from the public sector, from the energy side, really bringing those all together to socialize kind of the challenges that we're facing, share the solutions actually, and work together to share the solutions. So I'm looking forward to the engagement face to face, seeing live examples of some of the technologies that we've talked about in abstract, to be quite frank with you. And look, you know, great venue in terms of Farnborough on the 11th and 12th. I'm hoping the sun might shine as it is today, so that, you know, we can really enjoy being outdoors. I think overall, the overarching is kind of bringing people together to kind of share experiences. And especially in the current environment when it's so fast paced, I think kind of having 2 dedicated days to that is really welcomed.
Joy, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that wholeheartedly. And with my kind of financial, what we're hoping to get out of it as well is the Committee on Climate Change in the UK says that, you know, low carbon investment needs to scale up to 50 billion per year. And we're currently in the bank trying to identify ways that we can facilitate and support that transition. And so, yeah, we have a dedicated team with a lot of knowledge, really focused on helping to bridge the gap, the knowledge gap with our clients, really around how we can help accelerate them, where we can finance, you know, what are the discounted margins we can offer on products like sustainability linked loans, and really just gaining as much knowledge and expertise as we can on the technologies available so that we can really help to identify where we can accelerate.
Well, I'm very excited about it because firstly, you learn so much about what is happening as you walk the floor. You can't help but to run into people who've got parallel, if not similar, interests. Yeah. There's always a buzz of people announcing new products, announcing new ideas, and talking about what's worked and what hasn't worked for them and also for others. So I think it should be extraordinary. I hope it works really very well. And as far as the bank is concerned, then, a big opportunity to meet customers and potential customers too.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we see that as kind of, you know, super important. I mean, net zero is new to many, and it will see lots of new startup businesses that we really want to support. And I think the area that we sit in within the bank is, you know, I'm working along hand in glove with Joy's team. We've got a certain sector expertise, and we need to make sure that we can maximize how we provide that to the market. And this kind of forum really, really, really provides that.
So I've been talking to Joy Newton and Victoria Whitehead from Lloyds Bank. Lloyds is a corporate sponsor for ITT Hub, and this has been an ITTHub.net production. ITTHub.net is where you'll find all the latest transport news and details of this and, of course, all of our other podcasts. And it leads you inevitably to ITT Hub at Farnborough this May 2022, where in just a short space of time now, we will all be back together again, learning more about data, learning more about energy, learning more about the disruptors, and also seeing and hearing from the manufacturers, not only of vehicles, but of the supply chain as well. So I've been really thrilled to talk to Joy and to Vicky today. Thanks very much for joining us. We're thrilled to have Lloyds as a corporate sponsor of ITT Hub, and look forward to seeing you there.